This is The Topic is Trek, episode 20 for May 18th, 2018. Matter, antimatter, exchange student. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, we really should get that guy in to host the show. He sounds so what? Oh, hello, everyone.
It's the reverb.
It is. I'm Clinton Allvord, and one of your hosts here on The Topic is Trek. And beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, sir. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Shh. You will cease to pry into my personal matters, Clinton, or I shall certainly break your neck.
Wow. And
there's no door there. He just does that shh sound whenever he, it's really weird.
I was just thinking that escalated quickly.
And back to join us a second time, although we don't know why he'd want to do it, is Mr. Crazy Joe Fiore of Megapodtastic. And honey, you got to see this.
What the hey?
Hey, how's it going?
He doesn't have his own sound effects. Shh.
I'm working on my, I'm taking a one of those master classes from Michael Winslow. I'll get back to you in a couple months.
Okay. We'll be waiting on it. You can make the sound of a helicopter. It'll be great. Well, I hope everybody's been enjoying the past 2 weeks. We've had a little bit of our break, but we're back again with a whole bunch of news stories we're going to cover. And then Crazy Joe has come up with a topic for our main mission. And then we have a very intriguing question for our Warp Speed Roundtable. I'm going to toss that out for feedback from everybody and maybe invite your feedback as well. Heck, I'll say up front, I'll invite your feedback as well on the topic. But
you're skipping to the end there, cutting the middleman out.
He's giving a preview of what's coming on the show. That's new.
Yeah, I am. We're mixing it up here. We're always trying something new on the show. So now back to the same old format. We're going to open up subspace chatter.
Hey, we got all the buttons this time.
Amazing. And we're going to start off with a little celebration piece from Chuck.
Yes, this is from ABC7.com. I was reading the wrong part of the URL. That usually helps. From Hollywood, Los Angeles, KABC, actress Zoe Saldana has conquered just about every galaxy imaginable, and her hard work has earned her a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Hooray! At Thursday's unveiling, Saldana was praised for her Avatar, praised by her Avatar director, James Cameron, and her longtime friend and fellow actress, Mila Kunis. She was also showered with hugs from her husband and three young sons. In Saldana's emotional thank you speech, she talked about having big dreams ever since she was a kid, but that she just had to step away on her journey. My brain is all over the place trying to read this thing. She was just on step one of her journey. If I were to read the words and not try to see different words, it might help.
There you go.
She says, step two, sleeves up, hard work, persistence, passion, fail often and fail forward. I remember asking my sister if they thought we had what it took to make it. Could people like us really make it here? If you could make it there, you can make... Never mind. The answer was...
You can't afford the rights.
The answer was a typical, hell yeah, done in my best Samuel L. Jackson. The films that Saldana has co-starred in, of course, you're probably familiar with these, have grossed more than $6 billion, including Avatar, Star Trek, and, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy.
$6 billion.
I would love to see Gamora of her.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, actually, I was surprised that she has three children.
And they are very young. Yeah, she looks wonderful for a three-person, three children mom.
A three-person operator.
Words are hard for you tonight, Chuck, aren't they?
Right.
Don't try and think. Just read.
Yes.
That's right.
So we will now, speaking of thinking, we're going to be thinking about video games. And we'll move on to our next story at this point from Joe.
All right. Well, you can now play Star Trek Bridge Crew aboard the Enterprise D.
Woo!
Yay!
Yes.
All right. Star Trek Bridge Crew has already made dreams come true for fans of sci-fi and VR gaming. But the designer, Hunter Janes, recently was on the PlayStation blog to fill everyone in on an expansion. It's going to be Star Trek The Next Generation, and it will arrive on May 22nd.
Ooh,
and it does more than introduce just a new ship, all sorts of new missions, objectives, enemies, including the Borg. So, what I like about this story and the link I'm reading from here is they describe it as a rad VR game, and I'm very happy when I see the word rad used. So
rad. That's right.
So
it's we're bringing it back. We're bringing that back.
Gnarly, dude.
Should have never left.
Justin Timberlake's new album. We're bringing rad back.
So it doesn't say here. I believe in the original version of this game, although you're on a starship and it's like a JJ verse, Kelvin timeline Enterprise type ship. It's not the Enterprise. I don't know whether for this Bridge Crew, for this Next Generation one, because we see here a picture of the members of the Bridge Crew, and it's not Picard and Riker and Troy and Data and so forth. It's other characters at the stations. So I'm assuming this is also not the Enterprise in this one.
Could be.
But we have other video game news as well. So I'm going to turn, he says, turning Ooh. His head, even though he's not in the same room, yeah. to Craig.
Same room. Yes. Same state.
Confusion. Right. We're in the same state of confusion.
That's the state I'm in. Now, what was funny is I love the picture here. It looks like two stormtroopers are cosplaying Star Trek uniforms.
I would love to see that cosplay.
I know. I would, too. It'd be awesome. So, look. I'm reading from the article. Look that way. Star Wars Battlefront 2 is a fun game despite its microtransaction controversy at launch. We all know that Star Wars fandom is loyal as hell, but so is Star Trek fandom, and oftentimes the two never meet until now, and in the best way possible, to be honest. The Goofy Troopers mod by Mr. Sakamoto is pretty much perfection. No, you won't see the USS Enterprise or anything like that, but you will don some pretty sweet reskinned outfits for those lovely or lovable misaimed stormtroopers. and hey, maybe the red shirt won't die for once. So you got these stormtroopers with the white helmets, but the uniforms are the rest of what will be the white is done in Starfleet-esque paint jobs with gold, red, and turquoise, I guess. Kind of blue.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, you may be having, no, the mod doesn't really have anything to do with other than standing around and looking pretty. That's what I do all day. But to be honest, does this blend really need to have a higher perfect? Okay. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, you can download the mod and you can play these characters and run around with Star Trek uniforms on the stormtrooper.
Yeah, I know. Does that put an extra big target on your back if you're running around like this as a stormtrooper? I don't know.
Well, I think if you're a stormtrooper in a red shirt, you're double expendable.
Either that or cancels itself out and you're immortal.
Well, that's true.
I'm not sure. It's like two negatives make a positive.
Hey, but I can't shoot this phaser to save my life and hit anything.
And I can't tell. I mean, we'll have links to all of these stories, by the way, in the show notes for episode 20. You'll find that over at thetopicistrek.com. Yay! And so you see the pictures that are associated with the article. And the one of the stormtroopers is giving the Vulcan salute. We've got, but I can't tell if one of them has a tricorder or whether that's just a standard Star Wars thing.
It looks
not the blaster, but the other thing.
Well, the other one, the phaser looks like Starfleet. And then so that must be a tricorder of some sort, like next gen tricorder or something.
So I guess you can also have the accessories, which is pretty cool.
Accessories make the man.
They do. And sold separately, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Accessorize.
So for our next story, we're going to throw something out there and immediately pull it back.
Yeah, return, abort.
Yeah. Jennifer Morrison just clarified that Star Trek IV spoiler. What? Well, apparently, speaking at a panel at Calgary's Expo this past weekend, or a couple of weeks ago at this point, Jennifer Morrison made waves by having apparently dropped a spoiler for Paramount's upcoming Star Trek IV. Specifically, she suggested that George Kirk, played by Chris Hemsworth, had actually survived the destruction of the USS Kelvin as depicted at the start of 2009 Star Trek reboot film. And immediately people went into overdrive on the speculation. Oh, so it's not going to be time travel. It's going to be this. It's going to be, that makes sense. Well, I mean, we didn't even see a body, and they just, people all over the internet were just going, this opens up so many possibilities. Well, not so fast. In the wake of this minor media flare-up, Morrison took to Instagram to set the record straight. As she explained, she was jokingly making reference to an earlier conversation she'd had with a fan, in which said fan had in turn suggested a way in which Hemsworth's character could return. Morrison further insists that she has no inside knowledge of the film, which has been in the works since at least the summer of 2016, and only recently found its director. Morrison's full Instagram post is available here. And essentially it says that same thing that I don't know anything. Please stop reading things into this. And I don't know. Forget what I said. Yeah. Don't look behind this curtain.
I mean, they haven't even settled on a script or anything.
But it was amazing how fast people latched onto this. Cause it really was.
Wait a minute. Is it really amazing?
It was
really a surprise.
Considering the fact that the interviewer asked the question and he said, well, you know, since, George Kirk died at the beginning of Star Trek 2009, she goes, or did he? It was like, just kind of, and I can see now that she was like, oh, I was talking to this fan and he had this idea. And I'm thinking, yeah, that would be kind of cool if that happened. And so if it actually happens in the film, then I don't know. You're going to consider her a liar. Oh, you knew all along this is how this was going to work out. Who knows? But
yeah, right.
He comes back via red matter.
So when you hear something on the internet, take it with a grain of salt.
What?
Of course.
And a shot of tequila.
Yeah, of course. Just the fact that this video of her saying this, you know, you still can't believe it. All right, so we're going to go from speculation about something to speculation about something.
Of course we are, because that's what this show is good at. We should write our own speculations.
We should. I'll speculate on that.
I'm doing that all day long.
I'll speculate. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. Anyone?
Hmm.
No takers?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm busy. I got something going on.
From TrekMovie.com, 7 characters that Marina Sirtis could play in Star Trek Discovery. We reported last week, Marina Sirtis tweeted that she was going to Toronto for, quote, mysterious reasons. Ooh. And then on Friday, Star Trek Discovery Episode 2 director Jonathan Frakes tweeted a picture of himself with her backstage. Coincidental? Perhaps. However, the next day, Sirtis called out Mary Wiseman specifically in a tweet, not the cast of Discovery or something more generic. There's a good chance that Sirtis just happened to be shooting something else in Toronto, which is a busy city for film and TV projects, after all, and came for a set visit while she was there. You know, it's always nice to drop in on your old friends and make some new friends. She had a particularly nice chat with Mary Wiseman, hence the name drop in Sirtis's follow-up tweet. No more, no less. But let's put our speculation caps on and discuss more interesting possibilities, shall we? Deanna Quick, Troi.
I'm going to get Jennifer Morrison on the phone right now. Hold on.
Here,
she knows nothing.
Here are some possibilities of characters she may play in Star Trek Discovery. Deanna Troi, not likely since she wasn't born for another 80 years. Tilly's mother, since Mary Wiseman seems to be called out specifically, might Marina have been there as a cameo playing Tilly's judgmental, curls-hating mother? Maybe. How about number one from TOS? This is a fun idea that we've seen floated about. What if Sirtis is following in her, quote, TV mom's footsteps? Majel Barrett Roddenberry played number one in The Cage and then was Loxana Troi, Deanna's mother in Next Generation. While it's a nice idea, we don't think Marina is the right type to play number one, as she's very vivacious, having left her conservative Troi persona long ago. She's also a bit, dare I say it, too old.
Don't let her hear you say that.
There go our ratings.
Too soon.
She could be the USS.
She's going to throw you overboard.
Could be the voice of the USS Enterprise, again, following in her mom's TV footsteps. But why wouldn't she just record that from some sound booth in L.A.? Does she have to go to Toronto for that? She could be, how about this one, the captain of the USS Hiawatha. Because we know that the USS Hiawatha somehow crosses paths with the USS Discovery, thanks to the casting announcement for Tig Notaro, is that how you say his name, as chief engineer? Perhaps Sirtis has a brief cameo as captain of the Hiawatha, akin to what Kelsey Grammer did back in Next Generation in Cause and Effect. Or she could be a Troi family ancestor. This gets fun when you start factoring in things like Paul Stamets needs to recover from brain scrambling effects of the Spore Drive. Maybe. And Beta Zed was name dropped by both Harry Mudd and Emperor Giorgio in season one. So you never know. Or she could just be a completely new character. Perhaps Sirtis isn't playing any of the obvious choices and she's doing a cameo on an entirely new character. The tweets of Mary Wiseman sure make it seem as if she's sharing a scene with Sirtis. Last week, Ted Sullivan tweeted about, quote, Tilly's jacket. So could this be Tilly in civilian garb instead of uniform? Perhaps
he's
meeting
playing Killy's mother.
Killy's mother.
Captain Killy's mother. She's stowed away when they jump back to the normal space. I raised her to be such a nice young lady.
I was not aware that Maria Sirtis did the computer voice in Star Trek Continues.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they dropped the ball not getting her for the Kelvin movies as the voice of the computer. Because, you know, Majel Barrett was dead and she played the daughter. She personally had a close relationship with her in real life. It seemed like a natural, I thought, but they didn't go that way.
Everyone remembers their first love. I remember the first computer love on Star Trek.
Quarking!
That was the first?
Actually, Majel was the voice of the computer in the 09 Star Trek.
Was she?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even realize that.
Yep. So, I mean,
that was the year she died, right?
Commands functions are offline.
Yay!
I think she recorded it before that. Yeah, obviously. Yeah,
before she died, yes. That's the best way to do that.
If she did it the other way, it would have been very impressive.
Hey, Majel, I know you're dead and all, but can you come and record something?
Unable to comply. Whoa. Internal scanner relays have been damaged.
We're doing some pickups. Can you think you can stop in?
Yeah. Just a little ADR and, you know, we'll be fine.
Actually, didn't we talk about that? We may have talked it on our other podcast, Chuck, but...
What Major other podcast? There are no other podcasts. What are you talking about?
That's true. No, Major Barrett had recorded enough stuff where they had a lot of the phonetics where they can basically have her say anything they wanted.
Artificial intelligence.
That's what I want for a Google Duplex. I want Major's voice. All right.
Santa Troi to call and arrange me a haircut.
That's right. So, Majel, did you record okay.
Right.
All right. Let's move on to a story that I threw into the lineup because I thought people would want to know. I think that it's important to know what is happening.
This is a sad story.
It is.
Yes, and it's kind of in the same vein as like Stan Lee's issues has been happening. So in Los Angeles, over the objection of actress Nichelle Nichols' manager, a judge Monday had named four individuals to serve as temporary conservators for the former Star Trek cast member who is allegedly suffering from severe memory loss. Los Angeles Superior Court.
Think about Nichelle, by the way, that was in the headline. So Nichelle, yes.
Yeah, I think I just said her name. Yes. Okay. So Los Angeles Superior sorry, you threw me off.
Sorry.
Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Barbara Johnson said she was granting the petition, brought by Nichols' son, Kyle Johnson, even though she was concerned about the potential cost of the conservatorship. The Nichols estate did not have a doctor's confirmation of the 85-year-old actress's medical condition. Johnson and Nichols' sister, Marian Smothers, attended the hearing, but Nichols was not present. Nichols played Lieutenant Uhura, a translator and communications officer aboard the USS Enterprise and Star Trek series that ran on NBC from 69. I think we're familiar with all that, and had roles in some of the Star Trek movies.
All right, folks, a little behind the scenes stuff here. We had an audio dropout in the middle of that story that Craig was reading. So we just want to sum up what's happening here, that Nichelle, clearly there's potential issues, and we don't have any firm diagnosis here in this story. If you're going to possibly be seeing Nichelle at some convention, we hope you understand if she is not there, that there are these other issues happening, and we will get back to that story if we have any further information over the next couple of months about what the status is.
So sad.
I think my big point was, it's kind of like with Stan Lee, you know, you see these buzzards kind of flying, circling around, just waiting for something to drop.
Why aren't you Mr. Merry Sunshine today?
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
It's true.
You see Stan Lee and you go, okay, he's saying this or saying that. And then you go, well, is somebody else kind of saying that through him? Or it's hard to tell. And same thing with this. You're never quite sure what somebody's motives are. Hopefully they're all on the up and up.
Yeah.
But, you never know.
Yeah. It happens all too often. Well, let's go on to something a bit more pleasant, although it's kind of another one of these things that doesn't really happen yet, but it's straight off the wire. Because we now have a wire on the topic of Trek. It's a very thin one.
Don't touch it.
Oh, it's electrified. So I'm going to pass things over to Joe for this one.
All right. Now, first of all, I'd like to report that this message, this report we got comes from T'Bones. T'Bones. We thank you, T'Bones, for letting us know. That's who this is credited to.
Is he related to like T'Pau?
I don't know. That's the son of McCoy and T'Pau. They had T'Bones.
They had a love child. Great.
That's not a, I know.
I saw the way he was looking at her on Amok Time. Yep.
I thought it was a steak restaurant. My bad.
Well, last year, before Star Trek Discovery ever premiered, we heard that Nicholas Meyer was working on a side project. The rumor was it was going to be about Khan in Exile on City Alpha 5, a miniseries. Well, we haven't heard anything about that. Well, last night, we've heard more about that. Nick Meyer spoke last night at Shakespeare, a Star Trek and Shakespeare event at the UCI School of Humanities. And he talked about this a little bit. An audience member asked him about it. This audience member said, a while back, there were reports that you might be working on a Star Trek miniseries. Is there any truth to that? If you're allowed to say anything about that. He said, yes, I could say something. I was hired to write a standalone Star Trek related trilogy, details of which I can't discuss or I'd have to kill you. Okay. I was writing it for CBS All Access, but at the moment, CBS is at war with Paramount Viacom about merging. They're in a power struggle, which turned really nasty this week when CBS decided to sue Viacom. So I don't think my project is going anywhere in a hurry. because everything's on hold while they sort out this merger business. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So that's what Nick Meyer had to say about that.
So what do we think this was supposed to be? Because a trilogy, you know, people are debating trilogy. Is that a trilogy of each their own little set of stories or three part something or other? The trilogy is kind of
nebulous. When I hear trilogy, I'm thinking like, you know, a movie. So maybe it's like a TV movie style. I don't know.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. Do you remember in the early 2000s, there was a RoboCop miniseries called RoboCop Prime Directives, and it came in the form of four made-for-TV movies that aired like one a week, but they kind of told an interconnected story. So my thought is, we heard it was a miniseries. Now he's calling it a trilogy. I'm wondering if it was like three made-for-TV movies that tell a story.
Could be. I mean, the nice thing, if this had actually happened, is it would have been great to have this be the between seasons of Discovery. And obviously that's not going to happen at this point. But that'd be a nice way to keep Trek on All Access while Discovery is off.
And keep subscribers subscribed to All Access.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know what their numbers, their drop-off was after Discovery was done. Certainly I know a lot of people went on for that one free week. I go back occasionally and just check out stuff on there. So, you know, I said I was going to cancel it. I haven't got around to it yet. Maybe I won't. I don't know.
You will in October, just in time for December to roll around.
but I haven't re-upped with Hulu, because the idea was I would then drop All Access and pick up Hulu again. And I haven't, you know, I haven't felt any overpowering need to go back to Hulu at this point. So,
yeah.
Hey, can I do it? Do we have time for a related side tangent?
Sure.
It occurred to me this week when everybody was complaining and complaining and complaining about All Access, and I don't want to have to pay for Star Trek, and we heard so many complaints. And over the last 2 weeks, my Facebook feed has been filled with people just talking nonstop about how much they love like nobody cares. They're just like, oh, okay, I'll get you the bread. Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Right. A lot of people get YouTube Red, though, bundled in with certain things.
Like so YouTube I'm not sure. TV or something like that?
Yeah, I think if you buy certain, like Google products, I think if you buy Google Home or...
Well, I subscribe to Google Music, and YouTube Red comes with it.
Right. So I think a lot of people aren't subscribing to that by itself. I think that it's kind of bundled in with something else.
And let me just say, for the record, I enjoyed Cobra Kai.
Oh, me too.
It was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to wax off of that story and wax onto this one over here.
And wax onto this one.
It is related, however, and this is the CBS sues Sherry Redstone and National Amusements in bid to block Viacom merger. So the bottom line here in this story is that, as we've discussed in the past, the Redstone family, specifically Sherry Redstone, National Amusements is the majority stockholder of both Viacom, which owns Paramount, and CBS Corporation. And she wanted these two entities to come together. Now, as a Star Trek fan, the idea of having television Star Trek and movie Star Trek back under the same umbrella is a wonderful idea. However, Les Moonves, who is the CEO of CBS Corporation, wants nothing to do with this deal. He thinks it's bad for the equity of the company. He doesn't want to have anything to do with any of the people in charge at Paramount. And he's now gone to the extent that he has put in a restraining order. And this is a legal restraining order, not you can't step within 500 feet of me thing. But right. But to shop to stop Redstone from changing the board of directors to kind of railroad this merger through. And he is going to attempt to dilute her stock value so National Amusement is no longer a majority stockholder of CBS. So there's lots of things going on here. And the interesting part for us is that not only do we no longer have this vision of one happy family again, but even Les Moonves agreed that what he's doing could potentially mean that someone could come in and buy CBS. So we could have more turmoil going on around here. So this has gone horribly, horribly wrong at this point.
Get my Star Trek under one roof and call it good. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems like that's probably not going to happen. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we thought this is probably going to happen. It seems a no-brainer. You're trying to get things together to make yourself stronger against all the competition. And it seems to be falling apart right before our eyes. And that's why the Nick Meyer project is on hold at the moment, because no one wants to do anything because no one's sure what's going to be happening next. I don't know if that has any effect now on Star Trek IV, because you would think that the Paramount would still need to move ahead with their slate of movies. So I don't think that's going to have an effect on that. But, you know, given what Nick said, who knows at this point? Everybody just might be, you know, putting everything on hold that is they don't deem to be absolutely necessary. I don't know.
I don't think all they right. know. They don't know.
they probably don't know. But what we do know is we have one last story, and I'm going to pass over to Joe to give a little intro on what we're going to talk about here. And then a couple of us have seen this movie.
Yeah, there's a movie. It was just hit DVD. It's called Please Stand By. Stars Dakota Fanning, Toni Collette, and Alice Eve, Carol Marcus from Into Darkness. And Patton Oswalt has a scene in it too. He's a minor part, but he's in there. And it's about a woman with Asperger's who is in like a care facility, and this is Dakota Fanning's character, and she breaks out to try to get to L.A. to get a Star Trek script that she wrote into Paramount, because they're having a Star Trek script writing contest and she wants to get it in by the deadline. So yeah, I heard about this a couple months ago. I think you guys did a story on it.
Yep.
And I've been wanting to see it, and it just hit DVD. So I saw it over the weekend, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I watched it today. I mean, as I said, we talked about it when the trailer first came out a couple of months ago. I watched it just so you know it's available in a bunch of places. I watched it streaming on Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure which other streaming services have it as well.
Yeah, Amazon does, but I rented it as well.
I got it on Vudu.
So there you go. It's available a bunch of places. It's not a comedy per se, but there are funny parts in it, and it's overall it's light. It's a movie with heart. It's not a movie that's going to make you mad or think too much about things. It's really about feelings more than anything else, and overcoming adversity.
Actually, to be honest with you, I wanted to. The story that she wrote, I actually wanted to read it.
yeah. They touch upon parts of this story, and you get little glimpses of the dialogue. You get different descriptions of characters and what's supposed to be going on in it. Now, she submits, and this, I believe, is even in the trailer, it's like a 457-page movie script, mm-hmm. which is a little long for a movie script. But she says, well, it has to be detailed. Everything must be in there.
That's right.
But yes, it sounded intriguing. And I think the imagery and the wording that they used when she was describing things that are in it was rather evocative. I mean, it really brought out a lot of emotion in it. But we definitely, I think we all recommend it for people to
absolutely check out. It was a great, it was a cute little movie. I think it was fantastic, fantastically done.
I really liked it, but I did have one major misconception about the movie going into it.
And that here we go.
I thought it was based on a true story. The reason I thought that was because, if you'll remember, all throughout the 90s, Next Generation DS9 Voyager had an open submission policy. Anyone right. could submit a script. So when I heard about this, I thought, oh, I mean, of all the places for her to be submitting a script, it's Star Trek, the one show that had an open submission policy. So I'm thinking, oh, wow, this must be a period piece set in the 90s when the shows were on TV. Mm-hmm. That was just my assumption. I was totally wrong. It's totally fictional. It's set in the modern day. And this contest to submit a script never happened.
Right.
But yeah, it's well done. It's entertaining. And the reason I'm not going to get into it here, but the reason that it's Star Trek that she's so enamored with, kind of when they get talking about why she right. has this fascination with Star Trek, it kind of, it's sweet, you know, it's, yes. it's touching.
You know, I thought it was, I didn't think it was a real story, but I did think it took place probably around the Voyager time frame, and then everybody was using iPhones and stuff. I'm like, what time frame were you sitting here?
Well, if you recall, the script contest is in conjunction with the 50th anniversary.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So the time frame is supposed to be roughly 2016 right. for this.
Okay. All right.
Which is why they still had a payphone that we don't know if it actually worked or not, but it was a payphone.
When they showed that picture of the payphone, me and my wife were both like,
All right. Well, that closes up our subspace chatter. Various press of buttons, sound, ba 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 ba, ding da ding. And
we may have had technical issue out. On this end. All right. Oh. Try this.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
The remote control isn't working.
Ah,
again.
Switching to manual. But now it's time, hopefully with buttons, to head out on our main mission. Okay, no buttons. Somebody's got a tribble. Is that Lorca's tribble finally making noise for crying out loud?
Hey, by the way, I do want to
quite as tribble.
I want to quickly mention. I know we have links to articles that we didn't cover.
Yes.
And there was one in there, William Shatner on the Ticonderoga bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a video in there, and that's pretty cool to see him sitting on the bridge.
Right. Anyway, well, thank you for mentioning that we have all the links to all the stories we talked about, but there's several stories that we just couldn't fit into the show. There's just so much going on. So I have included links to all of those stories as well in the show notes. And once again, you can find those for episode 20 over at thetopicistrek.com. That sounds like one of those 90s website commercials with the ding before you say .com. All right. Let's head out on our main mission, shall we? With the tribble that made its noise already.
Is that closer?
Now we get buttons.
The tribbles are jumping on the board again.
Chuck, set a course that way.
And this time around, our topic was suggested by Crazy Joe, so I'm going to let Crazy Joe kick off this whole discussion.
All right. Well, here is my thought. Star Trek V. It is a movie that is beat up on all the time for a variety of reasons. It could be any number of reasons. It could be the poor special effects. It could be the storyline of finding God. It could be any number of things. But one thing about Star Trek V that I think was ahead of its time, and I don't think people were prepared for it in 1989, but now I think the time has come, is the character of Cybok. I think Cybok is a tremendous character.
You are who, in error.
Whoa, hey, no editorial yet.
Let's look at Cybok. At the time in 1989, when Star Trek V came out, all the Vulcans we had ever seen were one way. They were all logical. They were nice. You know, they were, you know, you never met like a mean Vulcan. You know, they were the good guys. They were always the good guys.
Will Rogers, I never met a Vulcan I didn't like.
Hey, they're all nice until Pon Farr comes around.
Yes.
But you never met the Vulcan bad guys, you know, and it was they were all the same. They were all logical. They all suppressed their emotion. That was every Vulcan we ever saw. And I remember the biggest complaint I always heard with Cybok was, well, Cybok doesn't make sense. He's a Vulcan, but he gave into emotions. Vulcans don't do that. All right. Well, that was 1989. Now let's look at what we've seen since then. First, we have Enterprise. Enterprise comes around in the early 2000s. And in season two, we get the episode Stigma, where we find out that not all Vulcans in that time period can mind meld. And mm-hmm. the ones who could mind meld were looked down upon in Vulcan society. And there was a disease called Pinar syndrome. Mm-hmm. And any Vulcan who had Pinar syndrome, it meant that they were a mind melder, and the other Vulcans had a stigma against them and looked down on them. So for the first time in the franchise, we're meeting bigoted Vulcans. And now let's take it forward a little bit more. This season on Discovery, we got the episode Leth. Was it Leth? I think it's Leth.
I think it's Leth, yes.
Leif Garrett?
Or I pronounced it Lethe, but yes.
Lethe.
Yes.
Where we get the Vulcan terrorists who attack Sarek because they don't like the fact that he's married to a human woman and they don't think he's Vulcan enough. So in the years since, the Vulcans have become much more multifaceted than what we saw in 1989.
We got some of that in the JJ verse as well, when they were showing Spock's history about that the other kids were picking on him.
That's true. Exactly. So I think Cybok, if we look at him now with what we know, he makes a lot of sense. A character like all the alien races we've met, they've never been all one thing. We've got Ferengi like Nog and Rom, who just don't have lobes for business. We've had Klingons who don't want to be warriors, like the fat Klingon who runs the Klingon restaurant on Deep Space Nine. He's not a warrior. He's a cook. So we always see these aliens who don't kind of fit in with the stereotype of what we think of that society. So, of course, there would be a Vulcan like that.
And Hermie doesn't like to make toys.
No.
Exactly.
Not a misfit Vulcans. No.
I want to be a dentist.
Exactly. So I think Cybok today with what we've seen since, he's a pretty interesting character, especially when you take into consideration he's a full-blooded Vulcan who has embraced emotion, and he's the brother of the guy who's half human and is trying desperately to be more Vulcan.
And
it creates
the brother to a sister who is
traitor,
not related, and trying to be Vulcan.
Exactly. I think when you bring Michael Burnham into the equation, the three of them and the different routes each one of them took with their backgrounds, it's an interesting triangle. I think if we introduced a young Cybok on Discovery and played with his relationship with Michael Burnham, there is great storytelling potential there.
I think the only problem I had with Cybok in relationship to this thought of, you know, introducing a character like that is that he seemed too human, that you really didn't get a Vulcan sense of him at all. And I think if you lose all of it, then he's just a human. There just didn't seem to be, I wouldn't say it had to be a struggle, but there didn't seem to be enough Vulcan in anything he said or did, aside from the fact that he was trying to, you know, say it was a logical progression of things he was doing to get to his goal. But that would be the same with anyone. So that would be my concern, is that he just didn't seem Vulcan at all.
You know, I could kind of go with Joe and say there's a backstory in there. You know, he was struggling to be a Vulcan among Vulcans, but he knew in his heart that he wasn't, that he was somehow different. And then that finally came out, you know, it's sort of Cybok's coming out party, if you will, that
he was gay too.
He's different than all the others around him and ridiculed for it. So, I mean, there could be a story in there.
I think the fact that Michael Burnham is fully human and is more Vulcan than the fully Vulcan Cybok is actually an interesting thing. And I think if you took the backstory, what was young Cybok like? Was he always
right?
Like fully human? I mean, we saw.
Or was he trying to fit in? Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I'm trying to remember Spock never talked about him, and I forget if they mention, because clearly he hadn't just become like this. It sounded like they had parted ways because he was going down that path. And we don't know how long ago that parting of the ways came, whether that was while they were still young, 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, we don't know when that happened.
I thought he left Vulcan years ago because of he wanted to embrace the feelings and emotions and stuff. And I'm trying to remember how old he, I thought they, did they mention that a little bit in the backstory?
I don't know. I feel like
I do know that Spock mentions in Star Trek V that Cybok tried to convince him to come with him.
Right.
And then Cybok even says, you've been given a second chance. So Cybok must have been young enough.
Ooh.
That he grew up with Spock, because he did try to convince Spock to, hey, go down this road with me.
Here you go. Now, I'm going to shock all y'all. You ready? Are you sitting down? So after the death of his mother, Cybok was raised by...
You're reading the same page I'm looking at.
Yeah, so after the death of his mother, Cybok was raised by Sarek as half-brother to Spock. So they're all... The House of Sarek is dysfunctional and...
It's a messed up family. It's just a messed up family.
As a young student, Cybok was considered to be exceptionally gifted, possessing great intelligence, and it was assumed that he would one day take a place among his great scholars of Vulcan. However, Cybok rejected logical upbringing and chose to embrace emotion like his ancestors, believing that the key to self-knowledge was emotion, not logic. When Cybok encouraged others to follow him, he was banished and never to return.
Wow.
But remember,
Sarek doesn't say how long ago that was.
Sarek is a real failure as a dad to try and get his Vulcan kids where they belong.
Sarek's going, can we, number four?
Yeah. I'm going to adopt.
Remember, one of the people that felt like Cybok, or no, opposite of Cybok, excuse me, that where they were like, they wanted extreme logic. Remember, they tried to blow him up, Cybok up.
Right. That's that episode Leth. Well, and also thinking back when we talk about this, I mean, those origins do go back to original Trek, because we're talking about the 2009 movie where we see the other Vulcan kids beating up Spock, but that's talked about in Journey to Babel, where Amanda is talking to Spock about how Spock was teased by the other kids. So clearly, you know, that goes way back, and to Pring, very much logical yet extremely scheming as to how to get what she wants, you know, done in some sort of logical way, but making sure that Spock is out of the picture so that she can, you know, marry someone else.
Stan.
Yes. So that would be my only concern, is that I would just like to have that somehow. I need to have a little something to grasp onto besides pointed ears.
And a bathrobe.
That he's Vulcan.
A Hilton bathrobe by that.
You know, or he just becomes too human. If we could get some of that in there, I'd be all for that. That maybe he's still in his struggle at that point about what's going to happen. Because again, even in this article, Craig was reading from Memory Alpha about the background. It seems as if we don't know exactly when that occurred, that he decided to, that he was banished. So if we're in a time period where it's years before, you know, Kirk and so forth, that this is something that's happening, yes, I think that would be great.
Yeah, I think the introduction of Michael Burnham really creates a very interesting the Sarek family is a much more interesting family than I think we ever thought they were before.
Yes.
It's just like the personalities there, the full-blooded Vulcan who wants emotion, the half Vulcan who doesn't want emotion, and the full human who's raised amongst Vulcans and doesn't know where she goes. It's like they all turned out so different. I don't know. It's a weird scenario. I think there's at least an episode in there.
Absolutely.
I don't know. You have to do a whole season arc on it, but I think you could devote 45 minutes to that pretty easily.
Yeah, and at Clinton's point, you know, if you just got 20 years, you could have been from Rivendell for any
right. Any case.
Who knows?
Or Riverdale, whichever. Or Riverdance. Who knows?
It's too tall to be from. Really too tall to be from Hobbiton.
And I'm trying to think and clearly on Enterprise we had Vulcans who really turns out that they were concerned about humans in a variety of ways and we just didn't want them venturing out on their own. So there was scheming going on behind the scenes there as well. So for a long time we've had this underplay of the fact that Vulcans, yeah, there's logic, but there's also lots of other stuff going on there.
Yep.
And if we can see more of that as well, you know, even with other Vulcans that we encounter, that would be great. We had that, the Vulcan who was on the, one of the admirals, I think, and he seemed to be kind of didn't want to have much to do with Lorca type of thing. It's just, I have no use for this person or whatever. So, I think it'd be good.
Black Vulcan.
I think it would be good to see that variety, whether or not we have Cybok to have that variety in there as well.
You've also got the Vulcan. If you want to go back just a little bit further than Enterprise, you've got the Vulcan that was Sisko's adversary, Solok. I just looked it up on Memory Alpha, the one who came and challenged him to the baseball game.
Oh yes,
yeah. You know, it was just like I'm going to go stir some crap up with Sisko. I don't like the guy, so I'm going to go and try to beat him in his own game just to humiliate him. I mean,
they were just ribbing him.
All right. So we're all agreed. Yes. So let's get on the phone with the writers and we'll get that happening.
I think as soon as you mention the word Cybok, the writers will hang up on you. But
figured us out.
Darn it. We'll spell it backwards or something. I don't know. All right. So if you have any thoughts on that subject, you can get in touch with us. You can leave us a note on our Facebook page for The Topic is Trek or, you know, tweet at us at The Topic is Trek on Twitter.
Just
don't hit us. Now, we're back from our main mission. Insert sound effect here. I swear it's the same buttons every time. How does it do different things?
I've got 7 different sets here. It's not the same buttons every time.
And it's time for a Warp Speed Roundtable. And this time around, I'm posing the question to everyone here, which holodeck or holosuite simulation would you like to step into? Now, the rule is it has to be one that you saw on Star Trek. You can't make up your own about ancient Rome or cross the streams with Westworld or something like that.
Craig's going to the pleasure planet or something.
Hey, stop ruining my thunder.
And I will start things off and say that I would like to go to Nick Fontaine's Vix Las Vegas Lounge because I can't play a musical instrument, but apparently if you go there and sit down at the piano, they all laughed when I sat down at the piano and then I began to play because you instantly can play the piano and I'm assuming any other instrument you want. And probably if you're singing, you probably sing with perfect pitch as well.
Well, Trelane got Uhura to play the harpsichord.
Well, but this is like, I mean, you're doing all sorts of riffs and improvised jazz and it's amazing. So I want to go to Nick Fontaine's.
And I'm surprised somebody didn't open a place called that in Vegas.
Yeah. Get on that, Vegas.
That would have been cool if it was, well, beside Quarks, you know,
right.
You yes. know, in Vegas.
Oh, dear Quarks. Gone, but not forgotten.
Yep.
All right. I will next ask Chuck, which holodeck or holosuite simulation would you like to step into?
I'm going to that comedy club where Data used to practice and just sit in the audience and go, "You suck!"
And put your arms straight out back and forth, back right. and forth, back and forth.
So I tell you.
I'm joking within the normal parameters.
You still suck!
I got the joke. That was 7 years ago, Data.
Yeah.
That was a good right. throwback.
When I was a kid, I was so ugly, they hung a pork chop around my neck.
Oh, wait, I have one of those.
Just got that.
All right. How about you, Craig?
Well, I was going to say I would go hang out with Picard at Risa. Wait a minute. That didn't sound right. So.
What? What?
Go to Risa. No, so
Craig's gonna cosplay Picard in his silver speedo and short little towel jacket when we go on the cruise.
I will not kick you off of my lounge chair. Have a seat. I just watched the episode with the first Dixon Hill adventure, and I'm down with that. I would totally be in for jumping into a Dixon Hill novel. And I thought it was really funny on a side note of that episode was that I love how Picard was all giddy about the whole thing and trying to not contain his excitement. And then he starts talking about kissing a woman. And then you see Riker's our ears perk up like, "Oh, really?" The expression on his face. Like, do tell, Captain. I think it would look like fun to be able to jump into, the holodeck captured my imagination so much when I first saw that. And I thought it was cool that they walk through the door and then there's a wet pavement right there and they're making their way through, I guess it was New York, in the story. And I just thought, wow, the possibility. So something like the Dixon Hill adventure would I'd be down with, or the Sherlock Holmes one, but Dixon Hill.
Sherlock Holmes, I think, would be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
As yeah. long as Moriarty didn't have, no safety parameters turned off.
Yeah. Yeah. So this actually, the holodeck reminded me of you could have an awesome murder dinner theater thing,
Yeah. Except it could be a real murder because things go horribly wrong.
Why is Chuck laying on the floor? Wow, this thing's real. Yeah.
So lifelike. It's amazing.
Yeah. He smells just like him, too. Whoa.
This was Ensign Lynch. He got lynched.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, that was mine. What about you?
Joe?
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
I would want to go into one of the greatest holo novels of all time, Photons Be Free. no, not really. Honestly, my answer would be Vix, but since Clinton already took it, I'm going to go with my runner-up answer, which is Captain Photon.
Yay! Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that looks like fun.
All right, I'm curious. In Captain Photon, who would you be playing?
The robot.
Do I have to be a character that we already saw, or can I be my own character?
You don't.
I would be Tony Laser.
Now, is Tony Laser a good guy or a bad guy?
He's a good guy. No, I that's a guy I actually worked with. Oh. I worked with a guy with the name Tony Laser, and I just thought he sounded like a 50s sci-fi hero.
That was his name.
But his name wasn't Laser, like L-A-S-E-R. It was spelled like L-A-I. I don't know. It was pronounced Laser.
It was spelled S-M-I-T-H, but it pronounced Laser.
You muted yourself, I think.
I also worked with a guy named Christopher Go. I thought that sounded like a 50s sci-fi hero.
Go Speed Racer, go.
All right. So you've heard our answers. If you have a particular holodeck or holosuite simulation you would like to step into, again, you can leave a note over at our Facebook page at the topic, Facebook.com/thetopicistrek, or you can tweet us at the topic is Trek. We'd love to hear what you would like to step into. As far as the holodeck.
Look at the time.
Hey! That sounds... I think we're crossing the streams again.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Yes, you know, I was going to say, Clinton, and I was going to say it at the end of this show, but since my thunder has been stolen, I was going to say, I think you need to change the ending of shows, because that is more appropriate for this show than Comedy Forecast.
Oh. Yeah. I couldn't resist. Craig and I hatched that when he was here. I'm like, oh my God, you know what would be funny? If we stole from his show and put it on our show. You can even hear the organ in the background. I mean, it's clearly cut and paste.
Oh my gosh. Cue the time.
Yeah, the topic is Trek didn't pay for that, so I'm not
going to ask you a question. Hey, I should know the backstory of that, but I don't. How'd you get that?
It was part of a autism charity auction. Mm-hmm. And they had listed down several people that you would pay X amount for the amount. And I don't know if it was the same for everybody, but they would record essentially a phone message for you. And so I scripted mine so that I could use it as the ending of the show. And the thing is, when Sir Patrick got to, that's it, we're done, 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 done. This is Sir Patrick. That's it, we're done, 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 done. I'm going,
Stick with the script.
Really? You know, and I couldn't get him in, you know, for a second take. You know, some people, they just don't. But what I found was the very last of that ramble was exactly the same pattern that I always do for it. So it's all that dun 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 came at the very end of it. So I just chopped off the other parts of it.
Yeah. Very cool.
You know, it's funny. I thought about doing that for Megapodtastic. I thought about putting out the cash to get Gilbert Gottfried to do my promo.
Oh, wow.
You should have done it.
Or get one of the 20,000 people that do Gilbert Gottfried to.
he had on his Patreon for his podcast. If you gave him $500 to his Patreon, he would record a personal message for you, and I was going to have him do my promo. But I'm like, I can't justify spending $500 to Gilbert Gottfried.
Your wife had been like, I'm out.
Well, technically, I don't think we were married yet, but today it wouldn't even be entertained. So.
Yeah, I'm out. Right. Yeah,
and the good thing about this is I went to a cause as well. It was a fundraiser for autism awareness. So
sure.
That's a little better. Mine would have just gone to Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah,
that's not so good. Okay,
you don't even have the same show name anymore. What's wrong with this guy?
So it's time to refill our dilithium chamber and get the heck out of here. I want to remind you can find me at comedyforecast.com. You can find Chuck and Craig at Technorama Podcast at chuckchat.com/Technorama. Joe, you want to give some URLs out here?
Yeah, well, there's honeyyouvegottoseethis.com. There's also a Honey You've Got to See This Facebook page. Megapodtastic is on hold, but I'm working on bringing it back. I'm trying to get a new co-host. I'm actually in negotiations. This is a secret. I've been in negotiations with an experienced podcaster who may be coming on as my co-host, and I shouldn't say the name, but it's Danny Hillcrest.
I love it.
Thanks to LinkedIn.
Megapodtastic.com.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so if you like the show, not Megapodtastic, this show. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, Joe, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put it on the red shirt. Four people, no better than three.
We're done.
But she can keep on wearing those pajamas.
Yeah.